Our special guest today is Anthony Graffio, PhD. Anthony has a 40-year passion for helping science and engineering managers master the fundamentals of leadership. Anthony is currently teaching two graduate leadership courses at Northeastern University. Let's get to it. I want to welcome you to the MBL podcast, say thank you for joining us today. And if we could just highlight for the benefit of our listeners who you are and what it is that you do.
My name is Anthony Graffio. I go by Tony. I've been retired from corporate life for about 8 years now. I was formerly the vice president of two, you know, fairly large and prestigious R&D organization. One was called Battelle, which is the largest contract research organization in the world, as I believe. And the other company was called Arthur D. Little, which is a international consulting company. I was vice president and managing director at some point in time in both of those companies. I retired from Battelle and started my own company. It was about 8 or 9 years ago, Graffio and Associates. And the reason why I did that is I kind of felt that, you know, my career wasn't over yet. I had spent a lot of time developing my skills and really went on a leadership journey from basically a technician all the way up to kind of international manager. And I just felt as though I had gotten to a stage in my life where, you know, I kind of wanted to give back. I had a lot of knowledge. I had a lot of experience, you know, a lot of lessons learned. You know, you learn a lot from your mistakes. And as a result of that, I thought, you know, I'm still kind of young. I have a lot of energy left. And I thought maybe the next phase of my life is to teach, you know. Mm-hmm. First phase of my life was to learn. The second phase of my life was to perform. I'm in the third phase of my life, which is now to teach, you know, those lessons that I had learned through life. So I started this, you know, consulting company, which is basically, you know, kind of helping science and technology organizations with both their strategy and their execution and their leadership development. And that's where I am right now. I spent 8 years overseas in Kuwait, working for two very prestigious R&D organizations over there, the Kuwait Institute for Science and Technology and the Foundation for the Advancement of Science. And I worked over there working with their senior level people, you know, talent development and strategic planning for 8 years. And as a result of that, I put together an awful lot of product, an awful lot of, you know, training courses and performance evaluations and things like that. And as a result of that, I had a plethora of material that I am now, you know, using to develop consulting assignments and work here in the United States.
Tony, you've recently published two books on leadership, a graduate-level book on leading science and technology-based organizations, and an ebook on becoming a three-dimensional leader. Tell me, why did you write these books, and what's your philosophy on leadership now, given all of the experience you just gave us?
Yeah, you know, part of my responsibility when I was a managing director of these organizations is I felt as I had a responsibility of helping or teaching people that reported to me, mostly scientists and engineers, frankly. It was important that in addition to their technical skills, you know, they had to learn how to sell their ideas. They had to learn how to manage projects and they learn how to learn how to lead technical teams. And so in order to do that, it did require a lot of teaching and coaching because it certainly was obvious to me that while most of my staff, including myself earlier in my career, with pretty strong intellectual skills, but and very, very strong technical skills, but you know, really lacked an awful lot of emotional skills and other kinds of skills necessary to really kind of round one out, especially in the area of leadership. So when I, you know, retired from this corporate life I'd mentioned, I decided to see if I could distill the key lessons that I learned about leadership and management into a book. And my goal was to, you know, kind of stimulate young scientists and engineers to further explore and consider taking leadership assignments in management of science and technology. Because, you know, most scientists and engineers view management as, you know, administrative duties. And, mm-hmm. and if they look down on it, the fact of the matter is they just don't have a real good appreciation for how powerful an impact they could have as a manager of a leader of an organization because most of their role models have been administrators rather than leaders.
Right, right.
And, you know, frankly, part of this comes from, you know, my personal story. I mean, I wanted to be a leader for, you know, as long as I can remember. And earlier in my career, you know, my attempts at leadership were pretty awkward. I was reasonably successful, but the success was almost like in spite of myself rather than, you know, because of my skills. And I was fortunate enough around mid-career, late 30s, early 40s, to be mentored by a person by the name of Dr. Bill Hitt. He was the director of corporate development at Battelle, a company I worked for. And he really instilled in me a passion for leadership and basically starting with leading myself, you know, developing lifelong learning. And he changed my life. You know, he changed my philosophy about leadership. And it wasn't always about me. And, you know, the focus needed to be about we. And only after, you know, many years of trying, you know, trial and error, that I finally get it. It took 3 or 4 years to finally get it. That nothing really feels better than to, you know, lead people to excellence, fulfillment, achievement. And when you do that as a group, it's much, much more rewarding. And, you know, as a result of that, I became a student of leadership development. And I wanted to be just like Bill Hitt. And I started reading every book I could on the subject. I decided that, you know, writing this book and also an ebook that I wrote was, you know, kind of to pay forward, try to get some reach on this gift that Bill gave me by, you know, passing on these lessons I have learned throughout my career. And
you describe the three dimensions in your ebook as strategic leadership, performance leadership, and servant leadership. Can you elaborate on the different dimensions and why are they so important?
To me, there are three processes that you have to get right in order to be successful in business. And I learned this a long time ago from another mentor of mine that said, Tony, you know, whenever I've seen a failed initiative in our company, you know, invariably, you know, it was a result of one of three factors. You know, number one, it was a faulty strategy, you know, and or it was poor execution, and or I had the wrong leader in charge. And that really kind of, you know, stuck with me for a number of years, that this whole concept of, you know, strategy, execution, and leadership were really the three elements that, you know, made up a successful or a non-successful initiative. So, you know, I worked on this, on those three processes, and, you know, most of the book describes those three processes in great detail. I call it the performance trilogy, a term that I coined. And when you think about the people that are doing that, you know, when it comes to strategy, when I talk about strategic leadership, it's the first leadership dimension. It's about generating an idea, you know, or a vision or a goal that will create a future that's different from the present. I've actually defined leadership very simply, in my terms anyway. Leadership is the ability to transform ideas into significant results. If you're not transforming ideas into significant results, you know, you're missing an element of leadership, especially the strategic part. So, you know, generating an idea, developing a future that's different from the present, and then developing a strategy around that vision is the key to strategic leadership. And not everybody has that kind of talent. You know, it literally requires, you know, like imagination, you know, looking at business situations and seeing what no one else sees. It requires an awful lot of courage to act on your ideas, you know, despite the naysayers, and there'll be many of them. And, you know, finally, it really requires persuasiveness. You've got to communicate this compelling strategy that inspires self-confidence in yourself, you know, in yourself, and also confidence among the team to convince them to follow your dream. So strategic leadership is the first dimension. It's about looking to the future. And performance leadership, to me, you know, switching to the second dimension, and that deals with the execution part. So the second leadership dimension involves managing the present, you know, converting this strategy into a focused execution, turning ideas into results and intentions into actions. And so performance leaders, you know, they kind of, you know, translate vision into concrete objectives. They focus on critical success factors necessary to achieve results. And then they manage to achieving those objectives. This is kind of like more common form that you see in most organizations. Most people start out as performance leaders and they get ahead because they get things done. In this traditional view of managing, it requires, you know, conscientiousness. You know, you got to be disciplined and you got to be thorough and dependable and you got to plan ahead and delegate and, you know, pay attention to detail, you know, all classic management talents, which deals with performance leadership. And, you know, you also have to have a high degree of productivity, you know, the ability to manage your own energy and focus and that of other people. And finally, you got to make good decisions. You have to show discernment. You know, the ability to, you know, constantly make good decisions based on your cognitive and, you know, intuitive judgment. And, you know, usually in most organizations, if you have strategic leadership and performance leadership, you can have a great degree of success. But certainly what I found on later in my career is that without the third dimension, it's impossible to sustain that success. And to me, that's servant leadership. It's a common buzzword nowadays, and I think it's very important. And I know a lot of people are teaching this, which is extremely valuable because so very few people know it, understand it, and practice it. But I felt as though the book had to talk about all three dimensions, because if you just deal with servant leadership without really understanding strategic leadership and performance leadership, you're kind of missing two out of three of the elements. You know, the idea of servant leadership is to learn from past actions and grow and develop and adjust along the way. You know, the path is always complicated. There's always barriers. So, you know, the servant leadership includes not only personal development, but the professional development of your team. You know, so servant leaders, as they say, you know, lead from the rear. You know, they support their team responsible for meeting the goals, because it's the team that's responsible for meeting performance objectives, and empowering them, guiding them, helping them to grow as leaders. And that's what servant leadership is all about. And it's only by doing that that you can sustain leadership over a long period of time, over many, many different initiatives. It's kind of the traditional view of coaching, actually. It requires integrity, you know, behavior that's genuine in words and actions. And I think, you know, integrity is the foundation upon which most trust is based. You can't, you know, trust anybody that doesn't have integrity. It also requires empathy, you know, the willingness to walk a mile in another's shoes. You know, servant leaders, you know, listen and they think and they converse and act empathetically the majority of the time. You know, when they listen to others, they focus, you know, both intellectually on what the person is saying, but also emotionally about what the person is feeling. I like to call it listening from the heart as well as the head. Not something scientists and engineers pay a lot of attention to, as you can well imagine.
Right.
You know, and so getting that change in mindset, getting that behavioral change is so much more important than teaching them leadership skills. Because frankly, you know, my opinion, if you use the Pareto principle, teaching leadership is 80% mindset change and 20% skill development. And the vast majority of leadership courses that I've seen and that I've heard about and that I've attended, they spend the majority of time teaching leadership skills, only 20% of the equation. They don't spend enough time on changing mindsets and behaviors. And that, you know, that deals with the whole issue of emotional intelligence, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And last, you know, servant leader requires teaching skills. And by teaching skills, I'm not talking about passing on information, but, you know, basically the ability to foster self-learning in others. You know, to me, that's the three dimensions of leadership. And that's why I wrote this little ebook where, you know, you could buy the book for under $10. Or I could give it away if I wanted to when I was really trying to teach my classes.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it basically discusses these three, you know, three fundamental processes of the three dimensions. That's create a winning strategy and getting buy-in, not only from yourself, but for others who need to implement it. And number two, ensuring that the strategy is rigorously executed by creating a focused action plan based on, you know, critical success factors. And you know, you actively and persistently manage that process. And last but not least, you know, select and develop talented, motivated leaders to execute the strategy. And to me, if you get those three things right, you really, to me, have the foundations of leadership.
In your experience in your corporate life and in the management and leadership that you've gone through, is there weighted value to one of your dimensions versus the others? Do any one of your three identified subsets have a higher weighted value than the other ones?
That's really an excellent question, because the fact of the matter is, and I do mention it in the book, is that it is extraordinarily rare to find somebody with all three of those dimensions. Very, very. I've probably met two people in my entire life that I felt were excellent in both strategic leadership, performance leadership, and servant leadership. That's two out of literally hundreds of very, very senior executives. So, you know, if you think about that, most people start off in their careers and they advance because they have performance leadership. They know how to get things done. And only after a while do they eventually work up the corporate ladder, and because they learn strategic leadership skills. They understand the idea of, you know, looking into the future. But not all people get there. As a matter of fact, an awful lot of careers are derailed because performance leaders were promoted into a strategic position and they didn't have those skills. Either they didn't have them yet or they haven't acquired them yet. And as we talked about, especially in the world of science and engineering, you know, servant leadership almost comes last, and it's too bad. It's something that, you know, they would basically, like I said about my career, you know, would have gotten so much farther, so much faster had they developed servant leadership. So the secret to me is to, you know, find out where your strengths are. And when you find out where your strengths are, the secret to me is to surround yourself with people who have those complementary skills. I mean, if you're a performance leader, you know, make sure your team has some strategic element to it, or strategic leaders, and also servant leaders, because you don't have to be all three yourself, but you have to have all three as part of any initiative that you're going to try to execute. So to me, that's a very important part of it. And also, if you think about it from, you know, selecting people for certain assignments, it's amazing. An awful lot of the reasons why people selection doesn't work or fails is because they picked the wrong leader for the job. So, you know, people talk about situational analysis or things like that. You know, if you have an organization that is struggling, I mean, the market's changed, you know, you need totally new ideas, you have to transform the company, heading in a different direction, that requires strategic leadership. And oftentimes, you hire a performance leader to try to get that done. Well, performance leaders are not visionary. Performance leaders, you tell me what you want me to do, and I will make sure that it gets done. And you look at their resumes, and you say, hey, that guy's got a lot of accomplishments. You didn't ask the right question. Have they actually led change? So there's a situation where you can hire the wrong person for the job. And I've actually seen situations, it's really frustrating, where in an organization, you know, you go through a strategic planning exercise and you put together this beautiful strategy because the person in charge was a strategic leader. Now, what happens is that the person may not be a great performance leader. And after a while, 2 or 3 years, the performance isn't matching. The execution isn't matching the strategy. So they let that person go and they bring in another person. Now, unfortunately, I've seen this on a number of occasions. They bring in another strategic leader. Well, there may have been nothing wrong with that original strategy. It just needed to be executed. That would have been a great opportunity to test somebody in terms of whether they believed in that strategy that wasn't executed well and whether they could execute it as a performance leader. Hiring a performance leader then would have saved those 2 years of strategic planning. Most organizations say, okay, that strategy doesn't work. Let's bring in a new strategic leader. So what do they do for the next 2 or 3 years? They change the strategy. In the meantime, 5 or 6 years have gone by without execution. So you can see, you know, situationally, you know, you want to bring on somebody that has the right dimension, the right leadership dimension based on the situation. A young startup company with a lot of young people, you know, you better have some good servant leadership on that because these people need direction and mentorship and growth. Understanding your strengths, both in terms of who you are and what you're capable of doing, and understanding the situation that might exist in terms of who you're hiring to get a leadership job done, really depends on you understanding those three dimensions of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Tony, you've started writing your next book on personal leadership. Can you give us a preview, and how is it different from your current leadership books?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, after writing these books, which really dealt with, you know, team and organizational success and leadership, you know, it dawned on me as I was writing this, you know, so much of the success of team and organizational leadership, you know, deals with leading by example. You know, there's really no substitute for leading by example and learning by example. You know, I've always said that finding a good mentor is better than reading 1,000 books. You know what I mean? It's like you got no business trying to lead someone else unless you know how to lead yourself. So leading by example is an extraordinarily powerful way to be successful as a leader. So it kind of drove me to kind of key questions about what does it mean to develop personal leadership? How do you develop yourself? You know, organizations work hard at a strategy and an execution to try to be successful. Well, what about individuals? What strategies can an individual have? What execution can an individual have to try to be successful? And that kind of drove me to the whole issue around, you know, what is success? What's the relationship between success and leading a good life? You know, what's the difference between success and happiness? So I started asking these questions about personal leadership because you always see people that are very, very comfortable in their own skin. They have a lot of self-esteem. They've got a lot of self-confidence. They seem to have direction. They seem to always be, you know, have peace of mind. I mean, you want to be around these people. You know, they're just born leaders because they have this self-leadership. They have this personal leadership. And we all know examples. I don't have to mention them of people that don't have that are in leadership positions that, you know, frankly, very unhappy and make an awful lot of people unhappy. You know, I took a look at these questions and I said, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could develop, you know, that's the scientist in me. I'd like to develop a model or a hypothesis of what does it mean to be successful and what does it mean to be happy, which to me deals with personal leadership. And it's very, very clear that our current definition of success, which has been, you know, around since the beginning of time, you know, fame and fortune, obviously isn't the answer, because there are an awful lot of unhappy, successful people. And frankly, there are a lot of people who are considered unsuccessful that are very happy. So that clearly isn't the answer. There's also people that believe that there's a direct correlation between pleasure and happiness. And I'm thinking of, you know, dozens of examples of, you know, pleasure being immediate gratification that don't lead to happiness at all. And some happiness is derived from doing things that aren't pleasurable. So, you know, I'm working on all of these questions right now, and I am actually formulating a formula or hypothesis on personal leadership, you know, what it really takes to be successful and then happy. Read an awful lot of the success literature, read an awful lot about philosophy and psychology, and all of the ideas necessary to formulate this theory, I think, are out there. But unfortunately, some of it is just, you know, psychology, or this is the one thing you have to do. And that's very deceiving to the people, and I think it's a shame. But there's also some really good treatises on the subject, but it's taken through the lens of a professional, you know what I mean? And it's only one-dimensional lens. And, you know, I want to view it from a technical or a scientific point of view, you know, kind of combining all of the elements of experts in philosophy and psychology and the literature to see whether or not I can come up with a formula. And that's what I'm working on this next book. Hopefully it'll work out.
I'm not sure if you've had a chance to listen to any of the recent MBL podcasts we've released, but I think you might appreciate some of them, which touch on a lot of the thematically, some of the things that you've been mentioning now. It's quite interesting to hear some of your thoughts. From what you know about the MBL program, how does it align with your ideas about leadership training?
Well, I mean, I like it a lot. I think the kind of stuff that Phil is doing, especially on, you know, emotional intelligence and, you know, the idea of people's exchange of energy, I think there's some very powerful thoughts in there, and it does require people to change their mindset. So I think a lot of the things that you're doing are what I believe are the important things to be done in leadership training, and that is to make people understand why they behave as they do, what are the reasons for changing, and how do you develop a different mindset, and how that different mindset will change behavior, and how that changed behavior will allow you to make different decisions to have more successful results. So I think some of the stuff that is going on in that particular course is right on, especially as it deals with servant leadership.
Mm. One of my big takeaways from our conversation here, and something that Phil likes to highlight, is that organizational change starts with individual change. It seems that your methodology aligns quite a lot with that, change starts with the executive first.
Absolutely. I think there's no doubt about it. You know, an organization moves as fast as the person in charge. An organization develops a culture based on the person in charge. People really, really underestimate, I certainly did, underestimate the actual influence that you do have, both positively and negatively. When I first, you know, became a line manager and I had an awful lot of responsibility and budget, you know, I never realized that when I mentioned something casually at a meeting about, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could do this, you know, seven people left the room developing an action plan around it. I just mentioned it as an idea. So you have no idea the influence you have on people. So when you get into that kind of position of leadership, you have to be very, very careful about what you say, how you say it, because you are basically consciously or unconsciously building a culture. And the more you understand that, once again, this is a mindset issue, the more you're very, very careful about how you think and how you act, which to me is the reason why personal leadership is essential before you start developing team and organizational leadership. And I think that is definitely going on in your course.
Any other thoughts or ideas you'd like to share?
You know, I've also developed a framework for the performance trilogy in order to become a three-dimensional leader. It's in my ebook. There's actually a PDF that you can print out on the 10 steps of the performance trilogy. And basically, when it comes to strategy, I believe that, you know, one should dream expansively and don't limit your thinking. Most people have much more imagination than they think. You know, number two is evaluate thoroughly, you know, carefully examine your motives and realistically match your talents with any new endeavor. Don't take on anything that you can't honestly believe you can handle, or, you know, don't take on something that's too simple. It has to be very, very challenging, but you've got to evaluate it and evaluate your motives as to why you're trying it. The third item is to think strategically, you know, determine both the immediate goal and the long-term consequence of the new endeavor. And fourth is to plan diligently, you know, write down what are the key success factors and, you know, specific action items that need to be focused on to achieve your strategy. Those are the four steps in the strategy dimension. And there are three steps in the execution dimension, I think. You know, one is to communicate effectively. You need to provide kind of a compelling and persuasive rationale for your endeavor first to yourself. You got to convince yourself of this and then to your team. And then you have to act decisively, you know, act immediately upon your endeavor. You know, you have to focus on critical success factors and specific action items. I like to say, you know, being a technical guy, that, you know, potential energy is great. It's powerful. But nothing gets done until you turn it into kinetic energy. That's basically the difference between ideas and taking action. The third element of execution to me, or the seventh out of 10, is to adjust appropriately. You know, you need to monitor the results of your actions and adjust when they're not contributing to your success factors. A lot of people just, you know, blindly just go forward saying, this is what we're supposed to do. You really have to have a discernment in terms of adjusting when something is working and adjust it accordingly. You know, the example I use is a pilot in a plane going from one city to another. 99% of the time, they're off course because of wind and altitude, et cetera, but they're constantly adjusting the plane based on the navigation system so that eventually they wind up in the right place. And last but not least, I've got, you know, three elements of the development, which step number eight is to reflect honestly, you know, spend time, you know, reflecting on the reasons for both success and failure of each action item. A lot of people don't spend enough time in reflection. Number nine is to learn continuously. And that is, you know, I like to conduct a lessons learned exercise at the end of every project or at the end of every initiative and write down the results for future reference. And last but not least is to grow wisely. You know, increase your self-awareness, improve your mindset as you develop new strategies for future endeavors. It's all about progress and moving from one to another. You know, that's kind of like you say, the artist journey. It's like going from one, you know, success to the next success. And if you have a setback, it's learning from it, adjusting and moving forward. It's progress. So those are the kind of 10 elements I use on the three-dimensional leader that I thought I would mention to you.
Great. Tony, your passion for leadership is evident. If people want to learn a little bit more about you, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, I do have a website, www.graffioandassociates.com. That would be a good way. They can also reach me through my email, tonygraffio@graffioandassociates.com. And I can also, you know, be reached by phone. Feel free to call me at 339-832-7542. I'd be happy to discuss this with anybody that's interested. Like I say, you know, I'm at the age now where the important for me to me is to pass this message on to as many people as I possibly can. And like I said, you know, what Bill Hitt did for me, I don't know how many other people he did it for, but the fact that he did it for me means that my life was better. And if I could do this, pass forward this to, you know, one other person, to me, I would feel successful.
Tony, I want to thank you for your passion and your wisdom. We're on a similar journey, and we really appreciate your insights.
I look forward to spending more time discussing this and working together.
Thanks very much, Tony. We'll look forward to speaking to you again.
All righty. Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.